The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm Sif Hyder, the founder of Array. I'm a wellness entrepreneur and digital creator, and this is my show, the Dream Bigger Podcast. Listen, I love dreaming big, but you know what I love more? Actually having the resources to make those big dreams happen. And hey, dreams can sometimes be private jets, but other times they can look a little something like having the best skin of your damn life, or starting a successful business, or delving into spirituality. So on this podcast, I chat with experts and thought leaders from different fields about their tips and tricks on doing exactly that. So let's get right into it.
Hello, hello, friends. What is up? And welcome back to another episode of the Dream Bigger Podcast. So today on the show, we have Kelly Levesque, who is an incredible clinical nutritionist who I personally have looked up to for close to a decade, if not more than that. I actually read Kelly's book, her first book, I believe it's called Body Love, years and years ago. And it was my first real foray into all things nutrition, blood sugar balance, and just understanding the importance of different components of our diet. For example, protein, fiber, vegetables, fats, all of these different things. And today's episode is an absolute must listen if you are interested in optimizing your health at all, which, you know what, we all should be. So in today's episode, we cover everything from the hottest topic of today, which is, of course, protein intake for women. How much do we really need? How do we get it all in? You know, weight loss, Ozempic, fiber. We go all over the map. And I can tell you, Kelly is just such a wealth of information. She just has so much to offer. And also, Kelly is actually she was one of my bucket list guests for the show. And so I was really excited to finally get to meet her and bring all of you guys her incredible knowledge. So super excited for today's episode. Before we dive in, I wanted to read you guys this week's review, which comes to us from AA_CauseyRiva. And they say, thank you, Sif, for what you're doing. Just found this podcast and can't stop listening. So valuable, helpful, and inspiring. Thank you so much for leaving this review. I so appreciate it. Honestly, it makes my day to hear that you're a new listener and that you actually love the show. It really is. It makes my day so much better. And guys, you know, if you do have a couple of minutes and feel like the show has brought you any sort of value, I would be so, so grateful if you took the time to leave a rating and review. All you have to do is open up the Apple Podcast app, scroll down to where it says rate and review the show. In the rating section, if you feel like I've earned it, please leave me a 5-star rating. And in the review section, honestly, tell me anything you want me to hear, okay? Give me your feedback. Tell me your favorite topics. What kind of episodes do you want more of? Any guest recommendations, favorite guests from the past? Literally anything you tell me, I really do try to implement. And I base my show around what you guys are looking for. And so anything I hear from you, I implement and I so appreciate. Anyway, with that, let's welcome Kelly Levesque to the Dream Bigger Podcast.
Okay, so I want to start by talking about the Fab Four method. So tell me about it.
Yeah, so I love to teach my clients the science of blood sugar, and that's what I write about in my books, Body Love and Body Love Every Day. So the Fab Four is a short checklist to help you learn how to balance your blood sugar. So there are four things. So it's protein, fat, fiber, and vegetables deep in color or leafy greens. Mm-hmm. So let's start with protein. It's the first pillar for a reason. You have to get protein from your diet. Doesn't matter if you're vegan, vegetarian, fruititarian, you have to get the essential 9 amino acids from the food that you eat. And so what's also interesting is when you eat protein, it breaks down to amino acids, not blood sugar or glucose. Mm-hmm. So when you think about eating protein, It goes into your stomach, it's digested, it's absorbed as amino acids, used for everything in your body. It makes neurotransmitters, it makes hormones, your muscle cells, your skin cells. It's amazing, and it also regulates all your hunger. So you have over 8 hunger hormones in your body, and most of your hunger hormones are regulated by protein, which is amazing because if you're getting the essential amino acids that you need, you're gonna feel full and satisfied, and it's gonna have no effect on blood sugar. What's also really cool about protein, which people don't realize, is that you store amino acids. And if your blood sugar starts to drop, guess what your body can do? It can take amino acids and make glucose to bring your blood sugar up. But it's not causing a huge spike. So it's almost like a reservoir of backup amino acids that if you don't want to eat or you have a big break between meals, that your body can keep your blood sugar balanced.
Very cool. Okay, before we get into the others, I actually want to do a little bit of a deep dive into protein, okay?
Okay.
Because right now I feel like there's so much conversation around protein, especially for women, because for a long time it was like protein was for like the bros, you know? And now I feel like women are finally understanding that it's really important for us as well.
Yeah.
So how much protein should women be trying to consume? And like, what's your formula? Is it at every meal? Is it, do you prefer animal protein given that someone's not vegan? Like, tell me all your thoughts.
Yeah. Protein's definitely having a moment right now. Mm-hmm. And it is not just for the bros. It's definitely for women, especially
absolutely.
When we talk about preconception, pregnant women, postpartum, all of it. And so I've always been a proponent of protein. I mean, I just sit here and beat my little Fab Four drum. I'm like, protein, fat, fiber, greens. Protein is first for a reason. Like, it regulates hunger. It makes everything in your body. You need to get it from your food. But even my stance has evolved with the research, which is really interesting. I used to say 0.75 grams per pound of body mass, and now I'm at 0.1 gram per pound of body mass. So
really? So it's gone down?
No, it's gone up for me. So 0.75 was my prior recommendation. Mm-hmm. So 0.75 grams per pound of body mass. And now it's easy. It's 1 gram per pound of ideal body mass. So I'm
ideal, not current.
Yes. Okay. But I do, if someone is having a hard time, maybe they're a little insulin resistant or they're having a hard time with cravings, I will push that up even to 1.25, or I'll keep them at their regular weight. So for example, I'm about 125 to 135 pounds given whatever, you know, like depending on the week or the day. And I'm aiming for 130 grams of protein a day. So for me, that's at 3 meals and maybe an added snack. And I'm really leaning into a high dose of protein at those meals. And a high dose for me used to be 30 grams of protein. And now sometimes it's 50 to 60 grams of protein in a meal. And that is because there was some research that came out comparing 25 grams of protein in one sitting to 100 grams of protein in one sitting. And they used to believe that you needed to eat protein multiple times a day to create muscle protein synthesis, like to get your muscles to build and to have them be strong and lean. But now we know if you were to have like 100 grams of protein versus 25 grams of protein, and this is a study that came out earlier this year, for the first 4 hours, there's no statistical difference in muscle protein synthesis, but you see it from hour 4 to hour 10, the person who had 100 grams of protein is still able to draw on those amino acids and build muscle. And so what I think I worry about mostly when I think about women who are, you know, having babies or wanting to stay lean and strong going into perimenopause, I want their muscle mass on their body. I don't want them fasting and sacrificing a meal when they, you know, will basically break down their own protein.
Mm. So how are you getting 50 to 60 grams in a given meal? Like, tell us honestly, like I would love to, even for myself, because I also try to aim for like a high amount of protein. And I try to do like, honestly, I struggle to get to 120 grams even.
Yeah.
But I need to know, like, what are like some meals with high proteins for you?
Sure. And I posted this the other day, which was kind of like silly. And everyone had like a bunch of comments on it. But I cook a pound of ground beef on the stove. I pulled off half. I cracked 2 eggs in there. And I made basically ground beef and eggs and threw them in a siete tortilla. You know, that's like more of like a very filling post-workout style. And that was like 70 grams of protein all in. And so that isn't actually that hard to get to if you're willing to eat.
Yeah. Okay. So it's hard to, so like for me, I actually love ground beef and I'll make it with kimchi. That's like my thing.
Yeah.
I love ground beef and kimchi. It's like my favorite combination.
Yeah.
But I can only do like 0.25 pounds of it at a time.
You're basically like a quarter pounder.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, it's hard. Like, yeah. How do you eat so much of it?
Honestly, I'm committed because I like, feel the difference. And I'll tell you this, like, when we were talking before the show, you know, my son Sebastian is 5 and I breastfed him for 18 months mm-hmm. and then found out I was pregnant with our second Toshin and, you know, was pregnant and then breastfed him for 22 months. And in postpartum with Toshin, my hair was all breaking, my nails were breaking, my skin was dry. I really didn't feel vibrant at all. And I got a blood test, which I definitely recommend anyone in postpartum at the 3-month mark, you know, get a blood test, look at your iron levels, look at your thyroid levels, look at your vitamin D. These are things that can be really impacted if you're breastfeeding and just after giving all your nutrients away during pregnancy. And I had to get iron transfusions and I eat red meat multiple times a week. I eat liver multiple times a week. And it just goes to show that like postnatal depletion is real and you can be eating a bunch of protein and not digesting and assimilating it the right way. And so I've taken postpartum with Julian, my 3rd, very seriously. He'll be 10 months at the end of this month. And I mean, it's a really big difference in body composition, strength, energy, focus, all of it. And that really comes down to committing to that first pillar of the Fab Four, which is protein. I used to be of the belief, and everyone can choose their lifestyle, vegan, vegetarian, pescatarian, carnivore. I just feel like if you can learn to take protein seriously, everything gets a lot easier.
I absolutely agree with you because even for me, when I bumped up the amount of protein I was having, so what I'm anemic, like I have thalassemia, which is like a form of anemia, right? Mm-hmm. And so I noticed last year, at the beginning of last year, I was losing all this hair and that's not typical for me. Mm-hmm. And so obviously I went to get like all my blood work and everything done. And it was like, obviously started to take iron, like be really serious about it and all of that.
Yeah.
But then also it was like bump up the amount of protein. Cause for me, like I own a business and honestly speaking, some days I would just forget to have lunch.
Yeah.
And then just like snacking. And I know, by the way, like I've been there, you know what I mean? Like I have the information, but I would just like, I was unprepared.
Yeah.
But as soon as I bumped up my protein intake and I was having like protein 3 times a day. Mm-hmm. Like even though I'm not hitting exactly what I need to, still when I bumped it up, I was like, whoa, I have all this energy. I'm like able to lift so much heavier at the gym because I do strength training. Like it makes such a difference.
Yeah.
Such a difference.
Well, and I share the story about 72 grams of protein because of the research that shows that difference between hour 4, like 4 to 10, right? The larger amount of protein, if those amino acids are available to you, you're able to heal, you're able to build muscle. It's there for you to use as fuel to create glucose if you need it. Like there, it's just amazing for a mom, for a business owner, for someone who does have those moments where the email comes in, the call comes in, and you turn around and you're like, oh, I'm shaky, I'm low on fuel. And so that's become a go-to. Another great go-to is my Fab Four smoothie. Like I use that as a tool. I mean, I had it in my car on my way up to LA today. I've had multiple meetings. I did 2 scoops. So that's, instead of 24 grams of protein, you know, I'm getting 48 grams of protein. Yeah. And then I have, you know, chomp sticks and lupini beans and other protein-based snacks in my car, but I really lean on, what is it mostly? I think a lot of people will grab a protein bar or a protein ball, or, you know, they'll lean, even the lupini beans that I have, you have to look at the back and understand the nutrition facts. Mm-hmm. Is it mostly protein? Is it mostly fat, or is it mostly a carbohydrate? Because you're gonna metabolize, you're gonna have to digest and metabolize all of that. Mm-hmm. You want it to be strategic.
If you know anything about me, you know that when it comes to skincare, I am not messing around. I want skincare products that are simple and incredibly effective, which is why I am so excited that OneSkin is a partner of this show. So I'm going to rewind back to last summer, like summer 2023. I was invited to a retreat that one of our investors did, and there we got to meet other brand founders that he had invested in. And there I met the founders of OneSkin. And let me tell you guys, I was so, so impressed with what the company was doing. They were so rooted in science. They had created essentially a product which would actively reverse signs of aging, which I was very, very interested in. So I, since then, have been a real fan of the brand because, of course, when you meet the founders, you really understand the essence of the brand. And so, you know, immediately I was like, as soon as I heard them talking about it, I was sold. So I was really excited then when, you know, they came on as a partner on the podcast because I love their product. I think that there is so much efficacy behind them. And I think that it's just a really quality line of skincare products. So the secret to One Skin's, I guess, like efficacy is their proprietary OS01 peptide, okay? It's the first ingredient scientifically proven to reduce the buildup of senescent cells, those notorious zombie cells that contribute to skin aging. Fewer zombie cells mean healthier, younger looking skin with fewer lines and wrinkles, reduced age spots, and stronger natural barriers, something that's especially important at this time of the year. Your skin does so much for you. Return the favor with One Skin. So what's really cool is that they have leveraged their in-house cutting-edge R&D platform where they're actually able to measure the efficacy of age reversal molecules in their lab. So by staining skin samples in the lab for senescent cells and analyzing changes to the skin's genetic data before and after exposure to the OS01 peptide, One Skin scientists found that OS01 peptide reverses skin's biological age by reducing the number of senescent cells up to 50%. One Skin is more than just skincare. It's about skin longevity, targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your best at every age. Get started today with 15% off using Dream Bigger at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co. with code DREAMBIGGER. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please, please support the show and tell them that I sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with One Skin. Also, side note, if you're wondering which product I have been loving, I love their eye cream. I think it's fantastic. Enjoy.
Hi, I'm Mary Alice Haney.
And I'm Dr. Thais Aliabadi.
Dr. A, as she is known, is a world-renowned OBGYN. And together, we're launching a new podcast, SheMD, to empower women to become their own health advocate.
We're providing women with the knowledge and tools to really own their own health.
With celebrity guests and today's leading experts, we're dropping episodes every Tuesday. So listen and subscribe on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode.
Okay, so you said something earlier. You said that you could be having protein, but you may not be digesting it properly. Mm-hmm. How do you go about digesting protein more optimally?
Sometimes people will take digestive enzymes or hydrochloric acid. I mean, a lot of times if you're overly stressed or if you're not eating enough protein, you're not making the enzymes. So it's kind of this double-edged sword. A lot of times if someone has been plant-based for a long time and they start to introduce protein, they might not feel like they're digesting it. In that type of a situation, I would get them on digestive enzymes. I would get them on hydrochloric acid. I'd make sure that the acid and the enzymes are breaking down. I like to think of it like a brick wall. Everything that you eat is a brick wall, and the enzymes and hydrochloric acid break down the mortar so you can absorb your nutrients brick by brick. So if that's protein, that's amino acid by amino acid. If it's carbohydrates, it's breaking through the fiber and pulling out the sugar molecules or starch molecules.
Do you like to take hydrochloric acid? Is that something you recommend?
I don't personally take it at this time.
Yeah.
I'm not taking digestive enzymes right now.
Uh-huh.
In times of stress, or for example, if I know I'm flying to New York and I have multiple meetings or I'm seeing clients and I'm going to be eating out a lot, that is a great tip. Like, get some digestive enzymes, put them in your purse. You're going to a later dinner. You might bump up and add a hydrochloric acid capsule and some enzymes, then you're digesting that food a little bit faster. You're not sleeping on the food that you've eaten late. Mm-hmm. And if it's a heavier, bigger meal, oils you're not used to, extra food, that really helps.
Very cool. Okay, so we went through the protein.
Yeah.
Talk to me. Actually, before we move on from protein, I want to ask one more question about it. Have you seen that there's a lot of conversation about people saying that they should have protein before coffee?
So what they're talking about most often is that caffeine or anything that is a stressor is going to cause the release of cortisol and adrenaline, right? And when you have cortisol and adrenaline, then your body can dump stored sugar from your liver into your bloodstream. So you have a blood sugar spike without eating food. And so that actually doesn't just happen with caffeine. It happens, say, for example, I had a morning news segment and I'm going in and I'm like, ooh, nerves are high. Like you have a presentation at work. You are working out really hard. You're in an infrared sauna. I'm wearing a Levels continuous glucose monitor right now. And the other morning, my blood sugar skyrocketed. And that's because my middle son is out of diapers and pull-ups overnight. And he's screaming from his crib. And I'm like waking up to screaming. Yeah. So anytime that there is stress, he's like, I gotta pee. Anytime that there's stress in your body, you are going to free that glucose and you're going to have a blood sugar spike without anything. So caffeine can be a driver of a spike in blood sugar and a crash that has you eating suboptimally after. And so if you can pair it with a protein or you can pair it with a fat most optimally, if you're having caffeine with a meal, then it's going to have less of an effect. And you're going to slow down the digestion of that caffeine. Now, some people are fast metabolizers or slow metabolizers of caffeine. You'd look into that on like a genetics test.
So then do you prefer that, like, say you're working with someone, do you recommend that they typically do have some protein or like a meal before their coffee?
I mean, this is where I get into the nitty-gritty with clients. Like if someone is not using caffeine as an appetite suppressant and waiting to eat too long, and under eating protein, then I think it's okay if they wake up and like have a glass of water and have a cup of coffee and then answer a few emails or do their meditation or do their workout, as long as they're fueling before they are crashing. And that's the key, is a lot of times if someone isn't fueling soon enough, they overeat later. And we see late night eating, we see 3, 4 p.m. crashes and cravings for sugar, and it backfires because they probably aren't eating enough protein and they're probably not balancing their blood sugar, and it kind of can start you off on the wrong foot. So if you're someone who notices that, yeah, caffeine's an appetite suppressant for me, I could go hours without eating, maybe you mix in some grass-fed beef isolate, or maybe you mix in some unsweetened whey, or you could even take amino acids, but it will slightly slow your metabolism of that caffeine. In the perfect world, you're having caffeine with food, but that's not ideal or that's not realistic for everyone.
Okay, so in that case, what are your thoughts on intermittent fasting? Because we're talking about the appetite suppressant, so I'm like, okay, we may as well go there.
Yeah. So I like shortened feeding window. I don't like a 2 p.m. start. Like when I have clients who are trying to balance blood sugar, who are trying to get, enough nutrients in their day, I've just seen, especially with, I have a primarily female clientele, when they're waiting till 2, they can't get their protein grams in. Yeah. They are overfeeding late night. They're eating later. That shifts their circadian rhythm. We're not getting to body composition goals as fast as we want to. I can think of 2 women who are, postmenopausal A-list actresses who told me, like, this is really hard at this stage. Like, I'm not going to get to goals. They were intermittent fasting, lunch and dinner. They were eating basically the Fab Four, protein and veggies, very clean diets. I added breakfast and we lost weight. So it's a change, and it was inches and body composition goals met faster than we even anticipated. So I think that we've been sold that intermittent fasting is the best diet or great for brain health and inflammation and all that, and it is. But I would prioritize pulling your dinner back. And I don't let clients really eat after 11 most days. I'm like, find a way to get that first meal in. If you're not a morning person, have an early lunch, like 10:30, 11, and make sure that we're done eating by 6 or 7.
That was my issue as well, because I intermittent fasted for years. And then when I was supposed to bump up my protein intake, I was like, wait a minute, I'm not being able to, because I start eating at 2 and I'm done by 7. And the max I can physically consume is 2 meals,
Right.
And so then I had to, peel it back. And it was it was a slow thing, right? Because I was like, let's go from 2 to 1 and then 1 to 12. And now I've made it to 10 and I'm very proud.
Yeah.
But it's the only way I can get my protein in.
Yeah. And, there are times when I have a client who really does prefer that later later eating window, and we will throw like a chocolate milk protein in between lunch and dinner to kind of bump it up. But you have to tune into you.
Yeah.
Really, like, blood sugar balance is my jam. Like, I just like to see people not being diagnosed with chronic lifestyle diseases that we can avoid.
Absolutely.
We can avoid those by making blood sugar balancing, nutrient dense decisions around what we're eating, and let's not be a statistic.
I love that. Okay. So let's talk about fiber, because that's number two, right?
Fat.
Okay. So, and is it the order of importance, protein, fat, fiber?
And greens.
Okay, yeah. Cool. So let's talk about fats.
Okay. So just like protein, you have essential amino acids from protein and you have essential fatty acids from fat. So if you've heard of your omegas, omega 3, 6, 9, we have to get these from our food. And so fat is amazing because it helps with hormones. It helps with brain health. It is amazing for slowing down the digestion of your meal. So if you think about eating protein is satisfying. It's regulating. It's what your body needs to make a plethora of things, right? Fat does this amazing job of slowing down our digestion. So what the goal of the Fab4 is to get you all your essential nutrients and elongate your blood sugar curve. And so let's say you were having starchy carbohydrates or even non-starchy carbohydrates, vegetables and potatoes roasted with a steak. Those veggies, if they were just steamed, would break down and digest faster. But when we have olive oil with it, we're slowing down the digestion of that meal. We're elongating that blood sugar curve, slowing the speed at which the glucose molecules make their way into our bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
Also critically important that we have fat to absorb our fat-soluble vitamins. So without fat, the bioavailability of A, D, E, and K, it goes down. And so these are, I mean, we know vitamin D is more of a steroid in the body and it's immune building. And so I am looking for essential nutrients and that like glow from the inside out. I don't want you to crash. I don't want you to crash because that's when we crave. That spike, crash, crave cycle happens over and over and over again. And we can use strategies to keep our blood sugar lower or to bring it back down. But the reality is, if you're eating protein and it breaks down to amino acids, not glucose, and you're eating fat and it breaks down to fatty acids, not glucose, then the only thing left is the carbohydrates. And then we talk about the choices of carbohydrates we're making, which would be fiber-based carbohydrates, colorful carbohydrates that are loaded with antioxidants, polyphenols, vitamins, minerals, water, all of that good stuff.
So when it comes to fats, like how much should we be eating?
Yeah, a lot of times you're getting it if you're making meals at home, if you're eating meals out, like they're using a fat to cook.
Of course, yeah.
Olive oil, ghee, coconut oil, maybe there's guacamole in your Mexican food. You're getting those healthy fats. Mm-hmm. And if you're eating fats that are in their whole form, let's talk about almonds, avocados, olives, you have antioxidants that protect those polyunsaturated fats that may become inflammatory if they're like ground or exposed to light, air, and heat.
Mm-hmm.
So I love whole food fats. I'm not in search like, oh my gosh, I have to add tablespoons here and there. It's just, you're probably cooking with it, making a whole chicken and roasted veggies, you're using olive oil. If you're, you know, cooking eggs, there's a fat in the pan and you have the egg yolks. Salmon, steaks, they're loaded with their naturally occurring fats.
Mm-hmm.
And I love adding leafy greens and salads to every plate that I can add it to. And there's probably a vinaigrette or some kind of like pesto, chimichurri sort of dressing. The yum factor is there. And satiety is important to me.
Yes, I agree.
Satiety is really important to me when working with clients. You have to like your food or you're not going to be motivated to eat it. You're not going to be motivated to stick to it. And you're going to be in search of other foods in your pantry or, you know, takeout or whatever it is. And so not only do I want that meal that you eat to completely calm your hunger hormones, I want it to elongate your blood sugar curve and last 4, sometimes 6 hours until your next meal. And fat is the special sauce that helps us do that. I can't get you there with, you know, steamed chicken and broccoli. That's just,
I mean, what a miserable.
That's miserable existence. That's not how I like to live. That's not how I like to eat. And that doesn't really work for families either. When I work with parents that have kids, you know, to keep your kids away from the ultra processed junk foods, they really need to like what you're making. And I think there's there's a way to do that. And so fat really helps us get there. Fat also does a good job of telling our body to release this satiety hormone called cholecystokinin. And, you know, GLP-1's really popular right now with Ozempic. When we have protein and the release of CCK, I mean, it's just amazing for satiety and not thinking about food. And I think that is a real game changer for my clients. It's not just about eating the Fab Four to balance blood sugar, but really, what is it doing to all of those hunger hormones? Like protein and leafy greens do an amazing job of regulating GLP-1. CCK, when you have fat completely released and you feel completely calm and satisfied, there's a lot there. Mm-hmm. And I think the science motivates me and a lot of my clients to give it a try and to see how they feel.
So the third component is fiber. And I think this also makes way for like the conversation around carbs as well. So yeah. In an ideal world, how would you have clients pick their fibrous foods, I suppose?
Yeah. So fiber is like, if we're talking about a smoothie, you can add it in the form of psyllium husk or chia or flax. And, you know, there are people who don't do seeds and people who do seeds and people who want veggies. And that's like the light structure of the Fab Four is really what works for everybody. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not telling you this is the eat and do not eat list. I'm telling you these are the foods that don't break down to massive spikes in blood sugar. So you are going to have elongated curves. You're going to feel more energized. And so fiber does this amazing thing of slowing down the release of sugar and starch. So when you think about fiber-based foods in a meal, that's going to be like your cauliflower, your Brussels sprouts, your broccoli, carrots, celery, cucumber, all your non-starchy vegetables. You can have low glycemic fruits. You can have maybe even higher glycemic fruits. Maybe you're having a pear or an apple. The cool part about pairing that with protein and fat is and eating whole foods is that sugar and starch, you need to chew through it and then you digest it and then it slowly releases itself. So when I teach my clients about fiber-rich foods, I'm talking about cellular carbohydrates. So I want them to understand the difference between acellular carbohydrates and cellular carbohydrates. So let's say we're talking about that apple. A cellular carbohydrate is all of the sugar in that apple is wrapped up in the fiber cell. You got to chew through it to release it, right? Mm-hmm. Apple juice is an acellular carbohydrate. There is no fiber holding it back. You drink apple juice, your blood sugar, it immediately is digested. It hits your bloodstream. Your blood sugar goes up really fast. Your pancreas sort of freaks out, releases a bunch of insulin to pick up all that sugar and put it away. And we normally, you know, you put your sugar away or your glucose away in your liver and your muscles. And if there's no space left, then your blood sugar stays high, or your liver works to repackage glucose and kick it out as a triglyceride or fat and store it as fat and continue to convert that glucose molecule into fat, right? And so what's so interesting is if we can just get people eating cellular carbohydrates, more whole foods that the fiber is naturally slowing down the release of that sugar, the spike isn't as fast and it's not as high. And if we can do that slow release, then your pancreas doesn't overreact, dumping a bunch of insulin into your bloodstream. Because when we have that huge dump and that insulin stays high, hyperinsulinemia, you know, when we look at research, we know that elevated insulin and hyperinsulinemia, I mean, that's a better predictor. That means the body is very inflamed. It's a better predictor of dementia and Alzheimer's than age. Like, this is breaking your body down. And so we want to keep those insulin levels low. And when we're having flour-based foods, you know, even maple syrups and honeys, those faster carbohydrates that don't have fiber holding them back, we have that fast spike. We have that, like, very aggressive insulin dump into our bloodstream. And then our blood sugar starts to crash and insulin's staying high. So we're not able to access stored fat. So if you have elevated insulin, there's no lipolysis. There's no breaking down of your body's fat stores. And that's really difficult because you feel like you don't have energy. And the only way to get yourself back up is to reach for more processed carbohydrates or more sugar. And that's where the cravings start to really create this roller coaster of, I've reached for this, my blood sugar spiked, insulin crashed it down, I'm feeling shaky, I'm feeling irritable, I need something else, I'm craving something, you have another bite up and down. Every morning, if I check your blood sugar, your fasting blood sugar is going up and up because we can't keep up with the way that we're eating and insulin's staying so high that we're not able to use our own stores of fat for fuel, mm-hmm. and ultimately creating inflamed body that is leading towards chronic lifestyle diseases. So when we talk about fiber, we are talking about whole foods. I'm mm-hmm. talking about nuts and seeds. I'm talking about non-starchy vegetables, low glycemic fruits. I'm talking about like whole foods. And right there, that's going to deliver your gut soluble and insoluble fiber. So when we talk about gut health and the microbiome, all of those microbes are going to ferment the fiber because your body doesn't break down fiber. It just, it ferments it, but it isn't absorbed into your body. What's absorbed into your body is the glucose and the fructose. And what's interesting is that those microbes, they eat that fiber, they ferment it, they give off short chain fatty acids, which is fuel for the epithelial lining. So that's your gut lining, preventing leaky gut, fuel for your brain. It is phenomenal, the byproducts of fermenting fiber in our gut. And mm-hmm. so even though there's no essential carbohydrate, there is no essential carbohydrate, we can make carbohydrates from protein. I think we can't forget that we have a symbiotic relationship with, you know, the microbes that live inside of us, mm-hmm. and we need to feed and fuel them in a way that promotes, you know, health in our body, in decreasing inflammation and energy substrates.
So say someone has like their plate filled with the protein and the fiber and the fats. Mm-hmm. What's your stance on starchy carbs? How much should someone be eating? Is it at every meal? Like, talk me through that.
Yeah, no, it depends on the client. You know, if we were to get into the nitty gritty, if someone was wearing a continuous glucose monitor and they had healthy levels of fasting blood sugar every morning and they were having, let's say, sweet potatoes at night and we weren't seeing a massive crash and they were keeping them in a serving size that was appropriate for their body size, then great, you can handle carbohydrates. What people need to realize is everyone has a carbohydrate tolerance, and your carbohydrate tolerance is dictated by your genetics, your muscle mass, your hormones, and your activity levels.
Mm.
And so someone who is working out every day and having carbohydrates to fuel their workout or carb cycling around their workout, that I would talk to that client about, what does that workout look like when you are having carbohydrates? If you're working out harder and you're getting sore and you're seeing body composition changes, I would never pull that from you, because I'd rather you be building muscle, because that is our metabolic currency and that is longevity at its best. So really, it comes down to, well, how often are you active? How much are you having? And so a lot of times I'm talking to my clients about quantity, like how often, type, acellular versus cellular, because we can get away with eating butternut squash and sweet potato, and maybe you're having even like banana in your smoothie. You can get away with all of that if they're cellular carbohydrates, you're keeping them in a serving size, you're not seeing your blood sugar go up too high, or you're not having those cravings 3 hours later and crashing, then you're all good. But if you're someone who would rather sit down to a meal and just have the Fab Four and lettuce wrap a burger and have protein and veggies and then have a decadent dessert maybe like every couple days, then that's your jam. Don't deprive yourself of that. Just understand how carbohydrates work and how you can maybe bring that blood sugar back down. And you would cycle that, say, on a day that you're working out, so your muscles are hungry for sugar.
I actually love that you bring up this working out thing, because you're familiar with Jessie, right? Glucose Goddess?
Yeah.
So she's a friend of mine, and she always says that, like, after, like, if you're eating something, go out for a walk, right? Because, yeah, like, it helps you use that glucose, right? So yeah, it's like the same thing that, like, if you are cycling your carbs based on when you're working out, then you're able to go harder at the gym. And then on days where you're maybe not so active, you just kind of, like, pull back, and then it's, like, more balanced, I suppose, right?
Yeah. You know what's interesting, though, because I have been in practice working with clients for 10 years. Yeah. Is that, have you ever gone to the gym and you feel motivated then to eat a specific, like a healthy meal, and then you're motivated to sleep better? And then on the days when you're not working out and you don't have the same energy as you would have if you were working out, those are the days when you're craving sugar and you want the cookie or the extra coffee or whatever it is. It's kind of, this is where the Fab Four, where we don't have to be as strategic, because we can look at, well, if you're eating enough protein for your body mass, mm-hmm. and you're having those vegetables and leafy greens, or you know, the fiber and greens piece, the second half of the Fab Four is really the produce. It's the color, it's the fiber, it's the whole foods, it's the alive foods is what mm-hmm. I like to call it. Then you're feeling full and satisfied, and you balance your blood sugar over like a couple of days, the cravings really start to go down and the energy starts to go up. And so I like to teach people how to balance blood sugar by eating things that don't break down to blood sugar versus trying to find ways to bring it down. I love all of Jessie's hacks, mm-hmm. and she's been on my podcast a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And I really love that people are learning about blood sugar and the ways that they can support blood sugar balance, mm-hmm. because I mean, it is going to bankrupt the healthcare system when we look at preventable lifestyle diseases. But yeah, I just think that, you know, working out is a good tool to dump your tanks, because when you think about it, you have no control over your liver. Mm-hmm. Like, you eat carbohydrates, your blood sugar goes up, insulin is released, you store sugar in your liver, you store sugar in your muscles. Okay, you don't control your liver. The only thing you control is your muscles.
Right.
So what can you do? You can build bigger muscles so you have more room to have more fun with carbohydrates. You can move those muscles to burn that sugar, right? And I think that that's the key. Mm-hmm. And finding how can you get more consistent with working out so that you are constantly dumping those muscles of stored sugar and keeping them insulin sensitive and making sure they're hungry for whatever it is that you're craving.
So the last part of the Fab Four is your greens.
Yeah.
So if someone has had like the fiber portion of their Fab Four and they chose broccoli, for example, yeah. do you still recommend they add like a leafy green or something? Like, what are your thoughts?
I mean, that's
or is that like a two-in-one?
That's a little bit of a nitty-gritty okay. right there. Like, no, I'm looking for color. Where protein, fat, and fiber misses the mark is when I have someone grabbing a protein bar. And they're like, look, I got 20 grams of protein, there's 5 grams of fat, and this thing comes with 8 grams of fiber. Great. But there's no like alive whole foods there that are going to get you polyphenols to feed your gut microbiome that is physically going to stretch your stomach and feel like you've eaten a meal. Like, I think it's really important that we're eating meals of food, not just fast convenience foods, and that we're digesting those things and really bringing nature into our own body and feeding that ecosystem that lives inside of us. So there are definitely days where I have to lean on packaged goods or, you know, little snacks here and there, and you're traveling, you're seeing multiple clients. Okay, I get it, mm-hmm. you know? But if we can go back and focus on how can I add, I will say, like, the leafy green piece, you know, I'll make tacos for my family and I'll be like, cilantro, let's do it. You know, I'm looking for ways to add herbs and really expose my family to a variety, as the most variety of produce and that I can.
Love that. Okay, so talk us through an ideal day for eating. So you wake up, what do you recommend?
Yeah, so I have 3 children, 5 and under. And for me, it's like I will wake up, I'll have water with electrolytes or with lemon if I'm filling a water bottle with electrolytes to go. I'll have my coffee, I put a little inulin in it, sometimes a little collagen, and then for me, it's either a Fab Four smoothie and I'm on the go, or I'm making some type of animal protein with maybe I'm doing some rainbow chard or some spinach or even like tomatoes or kind of like leftover veggies. I'll just kind of throw it in a skillet and we're making even lunch and dinner food for breakfast, depending. Yeah. I'll crack an egg in it and call it breakfast.
I personally, by the way, love like lunch and dinner foods for breakfast. I have salmon for breakfast sometimes and I'm like, this is delicious.
Well, I will say the efficiency of that mm-hmm. is what gets you to your protein goals.
Yeah.
I don't think people realize that an egg is only 6 grams of
That's
protein.
That's the thing. That's the thing.
Talking about like I can sit down easily to a half a pound of ground beef and eat it and not feel full to the brim and feel good and calm and very satiated. But it's a lot for me to get to that same protein goal with eggs. We're talking 5 or 6 eggs, and that's bloating for me.
Same.
And it doesn't feel in the same way. I love the nutrients in an egg yolk. Like, give me all that choline and DHA and all that, those good B vitamins. But I'd rather have it like 1 or 2 eggs mixed into whatever that protein is for breakfast tacos, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or just maybe on the weekend if I'm having like a little, I don't know, sourdough toast with avocado or with an egg on top. Mm-hmm. It's more of like an accoutrement versus like, I know I'm getting my protein goal in here.
Yeah.
And that's just changed with really trying to push my protein limits. Mm-hmm. So like this morning, I grabbed a Fab Four smoothie.
You put 2 scoops.
I put 2 scoops of my protein powder in. I did actually 1 of my vegan and 1 of my grass-fed beef mm-hmm. just because I like the mix of amino acids that I'm getting there. They come comprised of different amino acids and I'm looking to maximize there. And then I came up here and I spoke at an event and I went to Farm Shop, which is one of my shout out to Farm Shop in Brentwood. And I got a big piece of salmon and they have sort of like a mezze or a salad bar. And I threw a cucumber salad and a radicchio salad on there. And it had some apples, some pomegranate, some green leaf lettuce, the cucumber, tomato, onion, garlic, olive oil. And it was awesome. Mm-hmm. And then I pumped in your parking structure. Yep. And I had some biltong beef jerky.
Love.
And then brushed my teeth in the bathroom and came here. So.
And what are you doing for dinner?
So this is a Christopher special, which means that I'm having tacos.
Oh, love it. Okay. And what are you making it with, like the ground beef that you were talking about?
Yeah. So we love Force of Nature. He is unwilling to eat this, so he makes two pans, actually. Mm-hmm. But the Force of Nature is 80% ground pasture-raised beef and 20% organ meat. Mm-hmm. So it's loaded with liver. Liver is the multivitamin of the animal. You're getting all your fat-soluble vitamins, all your B vitamins, and all of the minerals you would need for hormone health. And I love it. So you can't really taste it. A little bit of chili powder and mm-hmm. cayenne, and I'm good to go. We use the siete tortillas, some guac. It'll be delicious.
That sounds so yummy.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are your thoughts on Ozempic?
Yeah. You know, I have been working with type 2 diabetic medications from metformin to Ozempic with functional MDs that I work with, mm-hmm. with our clients. You know, there are certain times when there is so much inflammation in the body and we have a client who has worked really hard to up their protein intake, move their body, and they are having they have an inability to lose weight without absolute caloric deprivation. And for some clients, you know, a short regimen of that can calm hunger and allow them to see some of that stubborn weight come off. We see decreased inflammation. We see them eating in a balanced way and being more active, and they can come off of those and live basically a bit healthier of a lifestyle without the frustration. And so I don't like a quick fix. I love to fix things with food. Mm-hmm. There's many times, like dozens and dozens of clients, we've taken off type 2 diabetic medications by simply moving them to the Fab Four, getting them active, focusing on sleep hygiene and stress management. And it's, you know, 6 weeks to 3 months, and we can get them off those medications. Mm-hmm. In other situations, when it's used in a targeted way, and I look at the blood tests after and see reactive protein is lower and homocysteine is lower and interleukin-6 is lower, and those are all markers of inflammation, and A1C is lower and glucose is lower and insulin is lower, and they're vibrant and motivated and sleeping better and their joint pain is gone, and I say, okay, I don't know what the long-term side effects are of this, and they're prioritizing protein and they're working on building muscle mass and we're pulling them off it, you know, after 3 months, I'm going to let it be. And what I think the problem is when people think it's like Fen-Phen mm-hmm. from back in the day, where it's a quick weight loss drug and they get their hands on it and they don't really have those issues, I worry. Because we talked about it, your muscles are your metabolic currency. So when you think about what you control, you don't control your liver. You eat carbohydrates and sugar. Your blood sugar goes up. It comes down. It's stored in your liver and your muscles. Mm-hmm. If you're losing muscle mass, then when you get off Ozempic and you go back to eating the way that you normally would, then we have the inability to manage blood sugar, and your blood sugar goes up over time, inflammation goes up over time, and that quick fix is now a long-term problem.
You know what's interesting is when you look at, and I would love to get your thoughts on it, but like I kind of already have, but when you look at someone who goes on Ozempic without kind of like the proper knowledge about what they're supposed to do and like full understanding of like, okay, like these are like the food choices I should or shouldn't be making, it's like their diet is almost that of like someone who's had bariatric surgery, because they're just like reduced appetite, but they still don't have like the foundational understanding of nutrition. So then when they go off of it, they gain all this weight back. So I guess actually one of the audience questions, and I'm just going to pull from it, is if someone is wanting to go off Ozempic, is there a way that they can keep the weight off?
Yeah. 1 gram per pound of body mass and protein. When you are on Ozempic, the research shows us, and even with metformin too, is we're losing 50% muscle and 50% fat. So you have, you really have taken down some muscle mass. You want to build that muscle mass back up and you want to prioritize protein at every meal. I worry about the things that would maybe cause inflammation in the body again. I mean, if there was a history of drinking a lot or having a lot of sugar in the diet, a lot of processed foods, you will see the weight come back on. That will surge blood sugar, it surges insulin, then we have inflammation go up and you're in a state of storage. There's so much, insulin is the storage hormone. It's telling your body to store, not to burn, and you don't have the muscle mass anymore to metabolize that sugar for energy. It's going to be repackaged as triglycerides and stored as fat. So protein, protein, protein. I don't think intermittent fasting is for you. I think you should prioritize 3 meals a day, even if it's in a smaller feeding window. Let's say you eat between 10 and 6 or you eat between 11 and 7, fine, but get that protein intake in and eat it first to feel full and satisfied and go from there. Lift heavy weights if you can.
What about when you're, if you are on it, okay, then do you also prioritize more protein over
when
everything?
When you're on it, because the reality is we want to be spiking. We want muscle protein synthesis. And that happens when we're having enough leucine and enough essential amino acids to chemically message the body to build muscle. Mm-hmm. And so when you can, if you are taking some type of drug like that, I would say sit down to a minimum of 30 grams of animal protein a meal.
Okay. I mean, really good tips for, like, I guess you're answering audience questions. So then the next audience question that we have is, do you have any dietary recommendations for women with PCOS?
Yeah. So polycystic ovarian syndrome is insulin resistance manifesting itself in your ovaries. And so we want to reverse insulin resistance. And the way that we do that is through balancing blood sugar. And I use the Fab4 with and have had multiple clients with PCOS. We want to look at other inflammatory foods. So alcohol, sugar, you want to look at inflammatory chemicals in your life. These are your cleaning products, your skincare, your makeup, even if you're cleaning your house or someone is, like, what are we using? So we want to pull out all of those as much as possible. And then I would really watch with things that cause a spike in cortisol. So, and dysregulate blood sugar that we talked about earlier in the show. That's your excessive amounts of caffeine. If you are working out and lifting, I sometimes take PCOS clients and instead of doing HIIT, I say, yes, please lift heavy. I want to build that muscle mass and that and those tanks to store sugar and to help you balance your blood sugar, but I may not do a really stressful workout. And we look at how do we manage stress. I mean, things that are really popular right now, infrared saunas, in barrel saunas, cold plunges, these are all stressors on the body and times away from like social media and email, like how do we calm stress in the body so that we can really see blood sugar balance? I'd get a, if someone had the ability, I'd get them on a continuous glucose monitor like levels, because then they can start to see, oh, I didn't think that that had an effect on my blood sugar. Like, I think it was surprising to a client that kombucha would have an effect on blood sugar. But when you look at it, you look at the nutrition fact and you see carbohydrates minus fiber is net carbohydrates. And that's what's going to break down in your body as blood sugar.
How can you tell if you're insulin resistant?
There's a blood test. You can do a HOMA-IR blood test. You also can look at all of those inflammatory markers I mentioned, like homocysteine, interleukin-6, C-reactive protein. If you're insulin resistant to like the symptoms that you might feel as if you have carbohydrates, you have energy like everybody else. You're like, yay, it's like sixth grade sleepover with lots of candy. You're like, you have that energy. But at about the 90-minute mark, you're going to feel potentially like you're crashing, like you're irritable, you're craving more sugar. You have lots of cravings for sugar all the time. And really leaning into the foods that don't break down to blood sugar to nourish the body can help. Occasionally, I will use exogenous ketones to help someone get a different energy substrate. So your body can use glucose as fuel, but it can also use ketones and ketone IQ or keto IQ, like stuff like that. Those exogenous ketones, you can take them and that can give you energy to kind of get through and calm those cravings when we're first working to bring insulin sensitivity back. The number one thing that will increase insulin sensitivity is working out, lifting weights, and great sleep.
Okay. So. So the next question is actually the impact of sleep on weight loss or like body composition goals. So any thoughts there?
Yeah, lots of thoughts there. I will see better results when someone prioritizes sleep even over working out and prioritizes eating earlier and getting that good sleep. It's just so restorative, and it helps us get to our goals faster. Like, you can eat all the protein you want all day long and work out, but if you don't have that sleep time to build that muscle and heal and recover, we're not going to see the changes that we want to see. And so if you can, you know, switch out your lights to those amber lights, turn them down. I have like a Himalayan salt rock in my room and a nightlight in my bathroom. Like, those are great sources of light to calm your body, to allow for that natural release of melatonin and see those changes. Sleep, I can't prioritize it enough. And I'm a sleep deprived mom with a bunch of kids that wake up in the middle of the night or at 5:30 in the morning. So I know how important it is, and especially for goals.
Is there like a specific, and I know that this is like so different person to person, but is there like, if you could give a loose guideline on how much you want someone to sleep, is like, do you have that?
Yeah. Well, we always start with where we're at. I'd like to get clients to especially women, over 7 hours. Like, pushing into the 8 would be really amazing, because here's what happens. One poor night of sleep, and what we see the next day is insulin resistance. We see blood sugar, an inability to put away the sugar that we're eating, and elevations in blood sugar, elevations in insulin, cravings for carbohydrates, cravings for sugar. I mean, if you've ever had a bad night's sleep, you know what that feels like. Mm-hmm. It's like, how do I get the fast energy that my body needs? Caffeine and sugar. And there's a certain point where the caffeine ends and the sugar continues, right? And so, I mean, I can't stress it enough. Like, the research shows us that you are insulin resistant after a poor night's sleep. It's basically like you're pre-diabetic.
Wow, that's crazy. Kelly, this has been incredible. I learned so much. I'm sure everyone will as well. Thank you so much for being here.
It was so fun.
So fun. Thank you so much for listening. If you loved the episode and feel like it brought you value, don't forget to rate the show and leave a review. It takes 5 seconds and really helps the show grow so I can keep bringing on awesome guests. If you want to follow me behind the scenes, you can find me on Instagram at Sif Hyder. And don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss a thing. I drop new episodes every Tuesday, so come hang with me and shoot the shit with some really smart people, learn and unlearn, and have a lot of fun. See you next week.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.